Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live for a half hour each weekday morning at this time to take your calls. If you would like to, well, by the way, I say at this time, I know some people are listening to the program recorded, played later. Obviously, I said every morning. So if you're listening in the morning, you're listening live. If you're listening at night, then you're listening to a rebroadcast, of course. But if you're listening during the progress of the show, which is in the morning, you can call in and we can talk to you. You can ask questions if you have questions about the Bible or about the Christian faith, or you can raise a point where you feel there's a need for more balance or more or correction of something that's been said on the air. You're welcome to do that here and now. The number is 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. Our first caller today is Hank, calling from San Diego, California. Hank, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. What was the strange fire in the Old Testament? What was strange fire?
Strange is a King James Version word that means foreign. It's something that's from the wrong source, really. You're talking about Leviticus chapter 10, where in the beginning of that chapter, Nadab and Abihu, the two sons of Aaron, were commissioned to burn incense in the tabernacle. This is actually the opening day of the tabernacle. It was its first day of use. And they were supposed to take some coals from the fire on the altar. And that fire on the altar was actually provided by God. God supernaturally ignited the fire on the altar. The fire came out from the presence of God, lit the coals, and then they were supposed to keep that fire burning perpetually. So it would be God's fire. And they were to take fire from that source and burn incense in the tabernacle to God. And what they did is they took fire from some other source. We don't know what source. It could have been, it doesn't matter. Any other source would be foreign, fire, foreign to what they were supposed to be using. God had prescribed in great detail how the ritual worship of himself would be conducted, and they were simply innovating. And where they were supposed to take fire from the altar, they took it from somewhere else. And that's what's referred to as strange fire. We think of the word strange as like weird, but that's not how the word is used in the Old English. It just means like a stranger was a foreigner. Strange fire was foreign to the ordained source. So it just means they didn't use the right fire.
So it would be like me today, rather than using God's fire from the coal, using like a book of matches, for example.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, what I think is the principle behind this, God required that the worship of him offered through that which he provided, the fire that he provided, rather than some human invention of, you know, anyone can strike a match, or of course they couldn't strike matches back then, but anyone could build a fire, but this was supernatural fire. This is fire that God had sent, and therefore worship of God is to be fueled or fired by what he himself has supernaturally provided. I believe that this would be an emblem of the fact that we are to worship God in the spirit and in truth rather than through human innovations and rituals and things like that.
Well, where do you read in the Bible that God started the fire on the coals? Where do you read that?
In Leviticus chapter 9, in the chapter just prior to that story. In the end of that chapter. I'm not looking at it yet. I'll turn there. Let's see here. Leviticus 9, it's going to say that fire came out from the presence of the Lord and lit the fire here. It's verse 24, the last verse of Leviticus 9. Fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat that was on the altar. And so, of course, that would also light the coals or the wood that was there. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. And then the very next thing we read about is Nadab and Abihu bringing incense burned with strange fire.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, Hank, good talking to you. Thanks for your call. All right, you're listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg. You can reach me here at 1-800-227-5278. And we have a number of lines open right now, so if you call now, it is possible to get through. 1-800-227-5278. Our next caller is Arthur, calling from Los Angeles. And Arthur, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello?
Hello, Arthur.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. Very quickly, what do you think, you know, I hear a lot of pastors feeling there's not really something wrong with tattoos and all that paraphernalia that people are decorating their bodies with. They say, well, there's nothing, you know, biblical about this, but of course a lot of things are not written in the Bible, but it's basically something that you can connect the dots that is, for me that is at least. And I want to find out, you know, what you think about this, you know. That seems
about tattoos.
Tattoos and those lifting, I don't know where those people are. Me looking at it, you know, it hurts me already, but I just want to find out, you know, what this is all about. Is that something that
right.
I believe that is not really respecting, you know, our neighbors to begin with? Because I don't want to look at that, but I just want to have your opinion on this. Thank you.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Art. About tattoos, so you feel like having tattoos is not respectful to others because they don't want to look at them. Actually, some people might not mind looking at them. And to tell you the truth, some people might not like the way we dress or the way we wear our hair or our facial hair or something like that. They may just not like our looks. Or they might not like the way a woman wears her makeup or something. I mean, there's lots of things about us that people might not like when they look at us. That's not necessarily saying that we have to look in a way that everyone will be pleased with. For one thing, not everyone has the same taste. Some people actually like the tattoos. Of course, some tattoos are ugly and some are much more pretty. But the real issue is not, of course, whether people like looking at them, but whether God objects to people marking their body with them. There are laws in Leviticus that forbid making marks and tattoos on the body. Israel was told not to do that. But the question of whether that belongs to the moral category of laws or the ceremonial category of laws would be something that we'd have to consider, because there are a lot of things in Leviticus that God commanded that we would consider to be still very valid, including, for example, the forbidding of, you know, sexual practices that are perverted, bestiality, for example. We wouldn't rule that out just because it's in Leviticus. On the other hand, Leviticus does have laws that are of a ceremonial sort. They're not moral in nature, and therefore we don't necessarily consider them to have abiding abiding authority in the new covenant. And so the question of whether having a tattoo is a moral issue or a ceremonial issue would be something to consider before we could apply the law about it. I mean, Leviticus also has laws that says you can't wear a garment with two different kinds of cloth interwoven together, or I mean, there's things like that which we violate. Now, someone might say, well, we should obey that law too. Well, I mean, there's a sense in which people could argue we should obey every law, except we realize that under the new covenant, there is a new set of stipulations, and Jesus' commands become our guide. And his main command is that we love one another. Jesus didn't say anything about some of the ritual things, frankly, about any of the ritual things in the Leviticus. He didn't reestablish them. And my impression is that the ritualistic things of the Old Testament were not carried over into the New Covenant, but the moral issues are. Now, I am of the opinion, and I guess some people could have the opposite opinion, that the tattoo commandments are of the ritual sort, that this was something that pagans did, and for the Jews to tattoo themselves would be to be imitating pagan practices. And to imitate pagan practices would be suggest something of a compromise of their religion. Now, someone could say, well, today Christians ought not to be copying worldly practices. That's a compromise of our religion. And that is perhaps true, but it's hard to know what to call a worldly practice and what not. Does wearing flip-flops constitute a worldly practice, since the people in the world invented them and issued them as a style? Now Christians wear them too. How about you know, listening to the radio? Who invented the radio? Was it a Christian or was it a worldly person? Do we, by listening to the radio, compromise with the world? This is something that is more complicated than seems on the surface. I personally am not favorable toward getting tattoos, but not on moral grounds. I don't believe it's necessarily wrong to get a tattoo, and therefore if someone gets one, I don't judge them. That's just a matter of personal taste and preference as far as I'm concerned. But on the other hand, I don't think it's very wise to permanently mark your body with a marking that you don't know if that's going to be something you'll look back on and say, boy, I'm glad I have that there. And a lot of people even get Christian tattoos and figure that by doing so, you know, they won't have any regrets later. Though, frankly, some people who've gotten Christian tattoos have fallen away and lived worldly lives, and therefore they've dragged the image of Christ that they put on their arms or their chest or whatever through the mud by not living a life pleasing to God. When you put a tattoo on you, you're advertising something. And it's great to advertise that you're a Christian. But the thing is, some of the tattoos that people get, which they might think are glorifying to God, when they're older, and we might even say wiser, they might look at that same tattoo and say, that's kind of corny, or that's kind of dumb. I sometimes give the example of the bumper stickers I used to put on my car in the 70s. I used to have Christian bumper stickers. I had a VW van. It was plastered on the back with Christian slogans and bumper stickers. I was only 16 years old. Now I'm 59 years old, and I think of some of those slogans and say, thank God I could exchange my car for another one, or at least bumper stickers can be removed. Tattoos cannot easily be removed. Things that I thought were really clever and cute when I was 16, or which I thought might even be convicting to people, I grow up and I look at them and say, that really wasn't that profound. That really wasn't as good a testimony as I thought it was at the time. I mean, we do outgrow our early opinions about things, but you don't outgrow your tattoos. They stay with you. So I'm thinking that something like a tattoo is an unwise thing to do. I don't call it sinful. I don't think anyone should judge anyone for getting a tattoo. Well, depending on the content of the tattoo. Obviously, some things in tattoos are very bad, but some are not. And so I think it's a mistake for us to judge that. It's not a moral issue as near as I can tell. It's a cultural issue, and you and I are from an older generation where we didn't get tattoos. Like, I mean, the people who did were, I don't know, maybe sailors and thugs and people like that, but not ordinary people didn't get tattoos very much when you and I were young. So we're culturally averse to it, but that doesn't mean that it's morally wrong. I mean, cultures do change, and I'm not saying all change is neutral. Some cultural change is for the worst, but I'm not sure that that's the battle. I don't think the tattoo battle is the battle we're supposed to be fighting necessarily. I don't think we should be judging people for getting tattoos, but I do think that if someone came to me, a young person, said, I'm thinking about getting a tattoo, what do you think? I'd say, I don't think you should. Not because it's wrong, not because God will judge you, but you yourself might judge later on that it was really a bad idea and you wished you didn't have it. And I've talked to very, very many people who outgrew their attraction to the tattoo that they had, but they did not grow the tattoo. It's still there, and it'll be there till they die. So it's just a matter of looking ahead. It's just a matter of being wise about the future and realizing, see, young people often have the wisdom to know that what they think is so hip and so cool right now, 30 years from now, they might think, well, that was a dumb thing, but it's a dumb thing that's still stuck on them. You know, some people of my generation who had long hair outgrew the desire to have long hair, and they cut their hair. Fortunately, hair is easy to cut. A lot of people, when my generation was wearing their hair long, were, they were offended. But my generation thought having long hair was pretty cool. But not everyone thought that permanently. And a lot of people I knew who had long hair outgrew that. I'm one of the few who didn't. But most people outgrew that and said, you know, long hair isn't all that cool anymore. And so it was easy to cut it off. And, you know, all the traces of long hair only exist in their photo albums. No one can tell by looking at them now. Tattoos aren't that way. So I don't condemn tattoos. I don't make it a moral issue. I don't think God makes it a moral issue. But I think that it's a matter of wisdom. And a lot of times people who get tattoos are fairly young people who are not that wise. And sometimes they get tattoos, you know, in places where they can't be concealed, and sometimes the tattoo is something they really wish they didn't have. Of course, you can remove tattoos, but it's not a perfect removal, and it's not cheap. I think there's better ways to use God's resources. That's my opinion. People who disagree on that or any other subject are welcome to call me. Right now our lines are open, so give me a call at 1-800 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. You can get right through if you call right now. My friend Dwayne wants to make an announcement. I'm going to let him do that, and I'll be right back.
If God is so good, why does life hurt so much? The problem of human suffering has always vexed the minds of thoughtful people. Not only is it difficult to endure affliction, but the question also arises as to how to harmonize the fact of suffering with the biblical teaching about God. If God is all-powerful, wouldn't he be able to eliminate suffering? And if he is all-loving, wouldn't he wish to do so? In an eye-opening lecture series called Making Sense Out of Suffering, Steve Gregg demonstrates that the presence of suffering in the world and in our lives is not only justifiable, but it is also essential in terms of God's revealed program and purposes. Steve also shows how the believer is to respond in the midst of trials so as to benefit from them, rather than suffering in vain. Making Sense Out of Suffering, as well as hundreds of other stimulating lectures, can be downloaded in MP3 format without charge from our website, www.thenarrowpath.com. There is no charge for anything at our website. Visit us there and be amazed at all that you have been missing. That web address again is www.thenarrowpath.com.
All right, and welcome back to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg. If you'd like to be on the program, you can reach me at 1-800-227-5278. And I just wanted to, with reference to that last announcement, if you have not been to our website and you go there, you'll be overwhelmed by the large number of resources there. There are MP3 files by the hundreds. Verse-by-verse teaching through the whole Bible by yours truly, as well as hundreds of topical lectures. They're all there, and they're all free. You can't buy anything from us because we won't sell it to you. It's yours. Just take it. It's at thenarrowpath.com. Our next caller is Alan from San Diego, California. Hi, Alan. Welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling. I'm hitting the button.
I just want to remark about your last comment about the tattoos. I don't disagree with you, but I'm sort of a little extended on what you're thinking. I think the tattoo, like you say, is not something that you would judge with some person because God says you shouldn't do it. But there is a point, like anything, which it becomes something that you shouldn't do, and it becomes, I think, sinful at that point. When people totally deface themselves with tattoos, we're not talking about a generation that just gets a, you know, tattoo of Hi Mom on their arm like the sailors used to do. We're talking about people who are just completely defacing their bodies. I think it's a sign of the times. I think it's a sign of the time where the body has become something other than we're taught in Scripture to view it as. And likewise, I also think it's preparing society for the next big thing that's coming, which will be the sign of the beast. In our generation, I'm the same generation you're from, people would never have accepted a sign of the beast. Even when the Social Security was coming out, it took them a long time to get that through because people thought that was the mark of the beast. But now people have the mentality to accept any kind of marking that someone tells them you have for whatever reason, you know, national security, national identification, whatever it is. So this is a sign of the times, as I see it, that society, the world, is being prepped for the coming of the wicked one that is to come. And that's
okay,
all
Alan,
I
appreciate.
Say.
I appreciate your comment.
Okay,
right. God bless you, man. Thanks for calling. All right, our next call is from Diane in Whittier, California. Diane, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I really disagree with tattoos. I don't necessarily sit and, maybe I do. When I see a beautiful girl with a tattoo on her feet or a tattoo on her back, I think about the days ahead for her. I think about her wedding day and, you know, what that tattoo looks like when she's wearing this beautiful gown and she's got this stamp on her. I think it defaces people. I think that, and if you look at as far as getting a job and having a career, you go to the banks and you don't see the executives with tattoos on their necks. And I just think that we're really pushing the envelope, and we probably would be best to really consider the long-term consequences of a tattoo. That's my comment. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Diane. That's I think it's important for people considering tattoos to consider long-term consequences, too. Although I will say that not everyone who has a tattoo has an ugly one. And the lady at her wedding day, the girl at her wedding day, is probably, if she has a tattoo, she's probably marrying somebody who thinks they're attractive. You and I might not think they're attractive. But to tell you the truth, I think the way a lot of women wear their makeup isn't attractive to me, but it must be attractive to somebody. It's amazing the differences in styles. You and I, it sounds to me like you're closer to my age, rather than a generation or so younger than me. And, you know, we just don't have that, that doesn't appeal to us, like it does to young people. The issue is, of course, not so much as do we like it, do we think it's ugly or whatever. I have seen tattoos that I thought were quite ugly. I've also seen tattoos that didn't seem ugly at all. They seemed very pretty, but the question is whether the person getting the tattoo really can foresee far enough into their future to know whether that tattoo is going to be advantageous or desirable in the future. Obviously, when you do something, it's like if you were decided that it became popular to cut off your middle finger. It just became the style for people to have only four fingers on their hand. Well, if someone did that, it's kind of permanent, you know. And if the style passes, or the time comes when you're not part of that culture anymore, you still don't have the finger once you cut off. And tattoos are like that. Not quite like that, because you can't replace the finger, and you can, of course, remove a tattoo, but it's not the easiest thing in the world. And I've known, as I say, many people, including some tattoo artists, who after they became Christians, kind of wish they didn't have their tattoos, and yet they, in some cases they were covered with them. All right, let's talk to Jesus from Whittier, California also. Hello, Jesus. Welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you doing? This is my first time calling, and I have a question that I'm kind of struggling a little bit. I'm a full-time job and part-time college school student. And my question is about being in fellowship with the church, but at the same time, your schedule is pretty tied up. I just want to know your perspective on that. And, you know, maybe because it's kind of hard for me. So I want to know, you know, your perspective on that takeoff.
Sure. Sure. How long have you been a Christian, Jesus?
I would say about two or three years.
Okay, so you're still a young Christian and probably depend fairly heavily on fellowship. Yeah, well, Christians do need fellowship. And yet, as you say, you can get really busy. You're working a job, you're going to school, you're trying to fit church in there. And even church, sometimes you don't get that much fellowship there. You might sing songs and listen to a sermon. That's not quite the same thing as having fellowship where you're really having input into your life from somebody who you're relating with. So I would say that you have to get your priorities right, of course, and decide what you may have to eliminate. You know, you may not be able to eliminate your job. You might be able to take a lighter load at school, or you might be able to just, you know, get less sleep, you know, and find Christians. But the main thing is, since you go to school, there are Christians on campus. You know, there are Christian clubs and stuff on campus, and even if you can't be heavily involved in them, you could maybe visit them and become acquainted and let people know that you are busy, but you really have need to spend some time with Christians sometimes during the week and establish some friendships there. It's hard sometimes. I mean, when Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went into Babylon, they didn't have a lot of fellowship there. When Joseph was taken into Egypt, he didn't have any fellowship there, but he still remained faithful to God. It was a hard season. And Christians sometimes are in hard seasons. You know, Christians in the Muslim world, you know, they can't find churches to go to in many cases. And so, you know, it's not ideal. But your school and your job, you're not going to be doing both of those things permanently. You're going through a busy season where it's going to be harder to find fellowship. You just have to decide, am I going to be able to stay true to the Lord without more fellowship than this? If not, then I have to get more fellowship. at whatever cost. I may have to get less sleep. I might have to work fewer hours. I might have to lighten my college load. And you say, well, but I need to keep things at the same level. Well, I'm just saying, if you need to get more fellowship, if that's what your spiritual life demands, your spiritual life should come first. Remember, Jesus said if your hand or your eye causes you to stumble, you should cut it off. And he's not being literal there, but he's saying that if there's anything that's actually preventing you from, you know, thriving spiritually with God, then that thing should be sacrificed, even if it's something very precious. And sometimes a standard of living may be sacrificed by working fewer hours or a longer time at school getting your degree because you take fewer classes. But whatever has to be done, you need to make sure that you're monitoring your spiritual well-being. And if it's suffering, you've got to take measures. But I would suggest the first thing I would do if I were you is look for the Christian clubs on campus and try to, you know, you might be able to get some fellowship at the school, and it would help you out while you're still in school. Otherwise, you may just have to tough it out.
Yeah, it is. It is. And to add, you know, to the question more is, you know, now you add the wife, or, you know, the husband, and then the father of taking a family. So that's another, you know, it shrinks the time.
We get spread way too thin. We take on a lot of responsibilities, and then what we have to do is we really have to decide what the priorities are. Obviously, if you have a wife and children, that has to be your priority, and God, and the other things, as important as they seem to be, they have to take a back seat because you can't do everything well. You eventually, if you get overcommitted, you're gonna have to get cut off some things so that you can do what you've got to do to the most important people in your life and to God. I'm afraid that's all I have time to say right now. You've been listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg, and we have a website, thenarrowpath.com, with a lot of free resources. The radio show is listener-supported. There's no one paid except the radio stations, but we do have to pay them, and the money comes from listeners. You can help us out by going to thenarrowpath.com and checking out how to make contributions. God bless you. We'll talk again tomorrow.